Good evening and welcome to Blank Canvas, the home of visual art and culture in the Bahamas. I am Diana Sands, Communications and Development Manager for the NAGB, and you are listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget to take us with you when you're on the move by live streaming us at www.guardiantalkradio.com or by downloading the Guardian Radio app from the App Store or the Play Store. In studio with me this evening, I have two exceptional artists who are currently featured in the Diagla Foundation Salt and Earth exhibition that recently opened. You guys must see this. Welcome, Daya Nielsen and Shaquille Colby.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for coming. So I guess we can start the evening by Daya telling us a little bit about you, your background, how you became an artist, and your evolution, your process, your growth process.
Okay. So when I was growing up, I've always wanted to be an artist. Mm-hmm. There was never a moment in time where I changed my mind from something else. I just always wanted to be an artist, was always drawing and everything. I took some art classes with Sonia Isaacs and Kim Smith in high school. And then I went to university for visual arts in Canada. I went to York University in Toronto. And I graduated there, and I moved back home because it was too cold. I am half Canadian, so I did have the option of staying up there, which I know is a privilege, but I was like, I cannot take the snow. I can't do it. So I came back home. Yeah, no. So I've been home for 3 years now or 4 years, and I had my first solo show at Dungalik when I came home in 2019, and since then I was working for 2 years to create the body of work that is now showing in Salt and Earth over that period. But I'm working part-time, so I'm a part-time artist.
Well, I guess we can delve more into the actual work that appears in that show in a few minutes. So Shaquille, your turn.
Okay. Well, I guess my story is a little different. I've always been artistic and creative from when I was in primary school, and I've always been extremely tall as well. So growing up, people just always assumed either I'd be a basketball player or an artist, and I suppose I was a bit rebellious in that way. I didn't want to be anything that people said that I should be, so I wanted to be a scientist, a doctor, one of the two. But I don't think I had the academic bandwidth for it. Although I love biology and everything, it just didn't really pan out. Mm-hmm. So anyway, after graduating school, I didn't have the privilege of going off to college right away. So I worked, and I kind of used my artistic skills in a different way. My church at the time needed a graphic artist to do the pamphlets and brochures and stuff like that for the church. And so I just decided to learn Photoshop and start doing it myself. So that's kind of how I got started with digital media and stuff. So I am a self-taught graphic artist. And from there, I kind of worked my way up. I started as a junior graphic artist at a company locally, big company locally. From there, I moved on to being a public relations officer, then on to being marketing manager, just through experience and developing a portfolio for it. And now I'm a communication specialist for a project with the government now. In addition to that, I have a business that I run with my wife. We have an ice cream business called Pulpy Artisan Ice Cream. And so we do, so those are my two jobs. In terms of art and my practice, that's something that's fairly recent. Mm-hmm. I kind of put art on the back burner while I was kind of developing my career in communications and marketing. And so during the pandemic, I was just home. Me and my wife were just home. It's eating and sleeping. I just needed an outlet.
Sounds like quality time.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of my outlet for my creativity. I just started doing something different on the computer, creating these collages that kind of expressed how I was feeling and my aesthetic. And I posted it online and people really liked it. And I thought, wow, that's kind of validation. I'll do it some more. One thing led to another. And yeah, I was a part of my first show last year in October, sometime late last year. And this is only my second show with the Diagla Foundation.
Okay, so that's very interesting to get into art in that way. And also, you have to tell us a little bit more about your ice cream. but in terms of your inspiration for the show, and this is a question for both of you, how did you come? Well, I guess the audience must know that the work that was produced and that is currently on display is so intricate. The detail, I mean, it's beautiful. Omar Williams isn't here to speak to it, so I have to talk about how complimentary the floral arrangements are. It was so creative, innovative and very different, and it's aesthetically striking. And so I guess when you start your process, how do you get to that? You know, it's not just a painting. Like, this is very, this is something that you have to see and experience in person. So that level of complexity, how do you get there? Tell us about it.
Okay. So going back to, like, my first show that I had at Doonglick was about, like, my mental health struggles, because I have dealt with a lot of like anxiety, depression growing up, and like it came to a head, I would say, in maybe 2015. Like, I was like, it was like debilitating, is that the word? Anyway, I created pieces for the show that was about mental health, and I've been able to like learn like self-love, self-esteem, you know. And I kind of wanted to move away from that mental health stigma, because it was like, when I had the show at Doonglick, everybody was like, yes, mental health, you know, struggling artists. And I was like, no, I don't want to. Don't label me as that. So I've moved into this like new place for myself where it's like, I'm good, I'm happy, I'm more positive outlook on life. And like, I wanted to put that into my work. And a lot of that comes from nature. And so when you see the show, you'll see like a lot of it is about water. And I do feel that specifically like us as Bahamians, we have this spiritual connection with water, and it's very healing. And like, when we need a break, when we need like, I don't know, to have some sort of peace and calm, we kind of just go to the beach and we float in the ocean. And so I wanted to work with that. But also, I have a deep love for like animals and stuff. So I find that they have their own way of speaking into our lives that I wanted to pull from. And so I use a lot of symbolism in my work. So I think really hard about like what everything means when I'm creating pieces, and it does get to be a lot of detail. I love detail, so yeah. And you also love detail.
Yeah. So for me, my art, I don't want to say it's not, the actual imagery isn't personal, because that's not the case. I'm not creating depictions of myself per se. But my inspiration comes from just my love for this country. I find it to be such a privilege to live in such a beautiful place. Like, you, as Bahamians, because we grow up here and we grow up in the hustle and bustle, we don't really get to enjoy the Bahamas the way a lot of other people do. So they have a certain perception of our country that we don't have. For us, it's just struggle. Get me out of here to Canada or to the States, anywhere but here.
Right.
But people are dying to be here on our beaches and in our waters. And I try to view the country through that lens, because it is true. It's beautiful here. But I think when we promote our country on the global stage, we tend to focus so heavily on the natural aesthetics, the sand, sun, and sea. That's kind of what we do. And then Junkanoo, of course.
Yeah, right.
But for me, having traveled to like China and Italy and South America, I've seen how their fictional stories are so much a part of the culture. If you go to China, they have entire temples built in honor of stories that most Chinese people may not believe to be true stories, but it's fiction, but it's so ingrained and embedded in their stories. Same thing in Italy, there's frescoes in Greece, frescoes in churches or in museums about Greek gods and goddesses and that sort of thing. So this idea of folklore and legends and tales and fictional stories being such a big part of culture is something that we sort of miss in the Bahamas. We have stories, we have fictional stories that are epic. We have legends that are epic, the Chicktarnies and all of that. But it's not something that we highlight. Even in our museums, you don't really hear much about it. It's almost like, I'm not trying to be insulting, but we're very Americanized in that mm-hmm. way. Like, I don't think America does it either. It's sort of this hyper-intellectualism where fictional stories, like, that's so lame. That's not for us, you know? But I, through my work, my objective is to tell these stories and to go deeper into the stories because in a lot of ways they're so underdeveloped and there's so much room to add layers and to continue the tradition of creating folklore. So 100 years from now, they'll be telling stories with a bit more context because of artists and contributors and writers today are kind of continuing this transition. So the passing down and heirlooming and archiving of fictional stories and legends and tales, like, that's a big mm-hmm. part of my work. It's something that inspires me.
That's amazing. So the Maiden, the Shrine Of, mm-hmm. that was the piece. I mean, you have gorgeous pieces. That was something that stood out to me. Mm-hmm. What, tell me about that.
Yeah. So the series, so it's a part of a three-part series. It only has three parts now. I'll continue it. And it's called the Shrine of the Maiden, Shrine of the Matron, and Shrine of the Mother. Okay. And so this was sort of a fictional story that I created myself. It's about the power of womanhood and femininity in Bahamian history and sort of the impact that it's had on cultural development and society and politics. But the fictional story itself is just about a sorority or a sisterhood of women that existed hundreds of years ago in Bahamian history. These women were very influential in Bahamian politics, and they were sort of like the mafia of the Bahamas, but they wore like these elaborate headdresses, and they were just beautiful, and they adorned themselves in the nature around them. So that's why in the piece you'll see she has flowers and silk flowers and butterflies and everything in her headpiece. It's representative of sort of the creativity and the artistry that women have contributed to the Bahamian landscape, but then also their influence on Bahamian society. And just one more thing, the series represents women at varying stages in their journey through womanhood. So you have the Maiden you talked about. That is the youthful, green, young woman who's just discovering life. Then you have the Matron. That's a woman who's found love and she's learning responsibility and how not to be selfish and so carefree. She has to kind of constrain herself because she has more responsibilities. And then the Mother is a settled, older, wiser woman who's experienced life. She's secure. She's affirmed. Yeah.
Well, that's powerful. Well, Daya, after the break, we're definitely going to delve into some of your pieces, but that's a lot of insight, and I think that's why the viewing public must go and see this show at the D'Agla Foundation. So we are going to take a short break, but continue listening to the NAGB's Blank Canvas radio show, the show in which we talk about visual art and creative community. Stay tuned.